You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening, for subscribing, and to those who support us on Patreon. We've got some updates on the Patreon page, so go ahead and check that out. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil. We're recapping the Heat's 114-113 win over the Atlanta Hawks on Monday night. As they have so many times this season in the last 16 years, the Miami Heat called on number three when it mattered most. Wade entered the fourth quarter with 9 points, finished the game with 23 points, scored 14 in a crucial stretch to run away from a fast-paced Hawks team that has given the Heat so much trouble this season. Dwayne Wade's layup with 46 seconds left gave the Heat a two-possession lead. On the next play, Hawks rookie point guard Trae Young was called for a travel under his own basket, sealing Miami's first win against Atlanta. A good win for those in favor of a playoff chase, a bad win for those favoring the tank. But here the Heat are, just a half game behind Orlando for the number 8 seed, David.
Yeah, I mean, depending on where you sit on that spectrum, you're either happy or not based on today's results. I couldn't have predicted a win for tonight, seeing as how Atlanta has given Miami as many problems as they have. It looked like Miami was going to be able to pull away during that fourth quarter stretch where Wade was leading the charge, and you know, they had at one point a double-digit lead with just a few minutes left in the game, and then Vince Carter, getting off his wheelchair to knock down a million three-pointers, it seemed. It was unbelievable, and I shouldn't...
Yeah, he had two key three-pointers there at the end to after the Heat had taken a 10-point lead.
Yeah, and I shouldn't knock his age because, I mean, clearly he might be the better shooter between both teams, to be honest with you, and he was... Letting it fly with ease, maybe just one of those nights where he's dialed up. I'm sure those nights aren't as frequent as he would have liked them to be, but either way, he was pretty solid. You have to give Atlanta credit. They had a good fight despite missing John Collins due to injury. He's been problematic for Miami as well, but the Heat hung tight at home. I mean, it's a home victory for a team that's been struggling at the American Airlines Arena, so it makes a lot of sense to kind of relish this and see where we go through here. Look, the team is, if nothing else, this should prove to a lot of people who have written to us for our mailbag, who we always appreciate, but the tank is clearly not on. I think they could have just as easily given up. I think Wade wants to go one last time into the playoffs before he calls his career to a close. I think the team still believes in themselves and still sees an opportunity here, and they've got, you know, a couple games against Charlotte coming up. They've got some games against the Magic coming up. So there's an opportunity here for them to gain some ground in the Eastern Conference playoff race, and this is a good step in that direction.
Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, I thought, were really big in the first half, and Dwayne Wade kind of took over in that fourth quarter. Justice Winslow, 18 points on 12 shots, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals for Justice Winslow. He was awesome. Josh Richardson, also for him, 19 points on 15 shots, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He had a steal and a block. Speaking of blocks, Dwayne Wade with 2 blocks in this game passes Michael Jordan on the all-time blocks for a guard list. So yeah, that's pretty neat. I mean, I'm almost shocked that he didn't already have that record.
Well, but, article from, I want to say, Anthony Chang, I want to say either earlier today or over the weekend at some point, pointed that out, that was one of the things that he was still playing for, that obviously the playoffs are still a goal. But he wanted the record, and for him to be able to accomplish that so quickly, that's pretty impressive. I mean, look,
he got the second block in the second quarter against a guy named BJ Johnson who plays for the Hawks and is apparently an NBA player.
There you go. I did not know who BJ Johnson was, but then again, I'm surprised that
he will go down in history as the guy who got blocked by Dwayne Wade so that he could surpass Michael Jordan for a record.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll rack a couple more blocks before the season's through, whether or not they make the playoffs. But hey, before we get into it, surprise or no surprise that he gave Herter the jersey exchange at the end of the game?
Major surprise. Where the hell did that come from?
I think Herter was surprised more than anybody else.
Yeah, Wade had to call him to come back out of the tunnel. Herter was on his way off the court because he's like, I'm not getting the jersey. Why would I get the jersey? And then he probably didn't even think about the jersey. He was like, I'm out.
Yeah, you could see the look of shock on his face, like, are you sure you want to give it to me? Like, I mean, he was kind of questioning the whole decision-making process.
Right. He's like, you know we don't know each other, right? No. I think it might be one of my favorite jersey swaps of the season so far. I really – because Dwayne Wade said after the game when asked, like, Jason Jackson basically like, why? And Dwayne Wade was basically like, I like his game. And that was basically it. He's like, I watched him in the preseason. I knew that I wanted to give it to this guy. I like the way he plays. I like his approach to the game. Everything I hear about him, I like him. And he wanted to wait until the fourth and final matchup against the Hawks to give it to him. Wade had been planning this one. And I love that. I love that Dwayne just like took an interest in a guy and basically just bestowed his jersey on him and just gave him his blessing as saying, you're a legit NBA player. You're going to be good. I mean, look, I can't speak for Herter, but as a guy who was taken late in the first round and is on a pretty bad Atlanta Hawks team, even just that vote of confidence from the second greatest shooting guard of all time is immense. I can't even imagine what that could do for that guy.
Well, I mean, it's probably the most surprising, but I rank it as the bottom three as far as overall player quality, next to Frank Mason and Terry Rozier.
Frank Mason might have been the worst one, because the only reason he got the jersey was because, number one, he asked for it. Number two, that leaning connection.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. Like, just give him your shoe. Give him the leaning shoe, and then give, like, Buddy Hield the jersey.
Yeah, anyway. That would have been a little bit more fitting. Terry Rozier, that was another bad one as well. Benny the Bull, yep. I mean, what can you say about him? I mean,
that was a great one.
He's an icon.
That's right up there with Herter. I just like the reasoning behind it. You're right, like, player quality, meh. But, like, maybe Herter's going to be really good. And to me, Dwayne Wade sees some potential in him, so that's pretty cool.
Has he given one to Trae Young and Vince Carter? I know we're totally off subject here, but...
I think Vince got one. I'm assuming Trae Young has had to get one at this point.
Well, Trae Young and Justice Winslow won't be exchanging jerseys anytime soon, that's for sure.
Did John Collins get one? He's a Fort Lauderdale guy, right? Or West Palm Beach or something?
Something like that, I think, yeah. His mom was stationed there, I want to say, and he grew up kind of idolizing the Heat. And I remember looking at him in the draft when we didn't know who Bam Adebayo really was and thinking Collins was a good fit there. And I know he had been written about, and he made it no secret that he wanted to join the team that he grew up loving, so... I'm sure he's a little upset about that, but I'm sure it's all worked out for him also in the long run.
Let's go to Twitter to take some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag #AskLOHeat. This question comes from Billy, who writes in, Winslow and Richardson looking good tonight. If these two stick on this path, could they be a good 2A and 2B next to, say, an Anthony Davis? David, I don't know what we did wrong here. Every time we talk about Anthony Davis, I keep saying, let's not get people optimistic, but I guess just the sheer fact that we're talking about it is getting people optimistic. Hell, I'm getting optimistic. I think there's a problem here. Still, let's just lean all the way into it, because why not? Winslow, Richardson, they'd look really good next to Anthony Davis. I think we talk all the time about recruiting chips. I don't know if they can get to that point, but if you're a player like Anthony Davis just looking for the right situation, the right organization, like we talked about on Monday's mailbag, Winslow and Richardson would be a big part of that.
I don't know if 2A and 2B is right, though. Like, at this point, I'm tempted to say Winslow is probably primed to break out more than Richardson is. I'm still not 100% sure of this, but I think his overall game and the fact that he's a better distributor at this point than Richardson, I think it's more likely that he'll be Miami's best player in the near future. And having said that, I don't know that he's a good enough top guy on the team. Like, I'm trying to think back to, like, when Shaquille O'Neal acquiesced to the trade from Los Angeles to Miami. The big reason for that was Dwayne Wade's emergence in the playoffs the previous year and the fact that he had this huge upside. And, of course, it proved, correct on Shaq's assessment there as far as being able to pair alongside a guy like Wade and see potential there. I don't know that Winslow or Richardson is that type of player just yet. So they might still be 3A, 3B at this
interesting
point. But either way, though, you look at LeBron and his... I mean, if Anthony Davis isn't LeBron, I think as great as he is, I don't think he's the kind of guy who can single-handedly carry a team. Fair or not fair? Because, I mean, they've had a pretty...
No, I think there's a short list of guys who can do that. Anthony Davis... I mean, obviously, he couldn't do it in New Orleans, but if you surround him in a better organization, I don't know. It's not even a talent thing for him. It's just the fact that he plays center, and I don't know if centers could do that in today's of game. But can I take it a step further?
Yes.
Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, Derek Jones Jr., Bam Adebayo. What about those four? How do we like those four around Anthony Davis in a hypothetical universe where Anthony Davis just signs outright and the Heat are able to hold on to all these guys? You've got Justice as your point guard. Justice as your point guard, Richardson and Derek Jones Jr. on the perimeter. And then you've got Bam and Anthony Davis in the front court. I think at first people might think that there's a little overlap between Bam and Davis, but Anthony Davis could shoot the three ball. He can extend out to the perimeter, and we know he doesn't want to play center full time or hasn't wanted to thus far throughout his career. Bam helps alleviate some of that, especially on defense where Bam could really hold his own. That's a really interesting five-man unit. So, yeah, there is no Dwayne Wade. There's no young Dwayne Wade here as your sort of bargaining chip. But maybe as a collective, this version of the Heat is even more deep. It might be more deep than that 2003 Heat team that was basically Dwayne Wade, and that's it, understanding that you had to get rid of so many, like the Caron Butlers and the Lamar Odoms, in order to get Shaq in the first place.
Right, right. And I'm trying to think, like, if he was willing to accept the move to Los Angeles, if we believe that he was actually trying to coordinate a move to Los Angeles, sure, LeBron was already there in place, but you would have had to have given up a significant part of that team's depth and younger talent, Ingram, Kuzma, etc.,
all of it. Yeah.
In order to acquire him in the first place. So it's basically going to be a two-man show there. Granted, LeBron James is still LeBron James, even as he struggles somewhat this year. But, the depth of this team, as it is currently a weakness, could potentially be a strength to lure another superstar or a superstar to join this team. And I think he fit perfectly there, so...
And I do think that we talk about the fact that this team doesn't have that one elite talent, but once you have that, this team just improves exponentially, right?
These guys may not be superstars, but they'll be very, very, very good players if there's another guy there to assume that mantle of leadership.
Ferris writes in, is Justice Winslow supposed to be our point guard of the future, or what? That's a really interesting question because... this gets into that conversation about what is Justice Winslow's ceiling and how good can a team be with a point guard like Justice Winslow? And David, I've talked about this a little bit in the past, especially in those matchups going up against Dallas where, the Mavericks are building around Luka Doncic. You look at the Sixers, they're building around Ben Simmons. They're just like these oversized point guards. Somewhat limited in different aspects. Doncic is a little limited with his overall athleticism. Ben Simmons can't shoot. Justice Winslow is somewhere on that spectrum. And there's kind of like this interesting case study across the league with different types of these oversized point guards. How do you build around these guys? How far can you go around these guys? Even in Philadelphia, with Ben Simmons, the most established out of all of these, all the guys that we're talking about, there was rumors that they might trade him at the trade deadline for an Anthony Davis or something like that. So this is a legitimate question.
It's interesting, though, because I'm not sure if Ferris is referring to some comments that Pat Riley recently made at that family fest over the course of the weekend. But when asked if he had determined, and this was according to Barry Jackson's write-up from the Herald, he asked if Justice Winslow is a starting point guard, and Riley's response was, you have to get rid of that. As far as the comparison is concerned, he says, I'm not comparing him to LeBron or anybody else his size who never really was a point guard, just a player. And then he doubles back here and says, Justice's overall versatility as a player, his toughness, his mental toughness, his IQ for the game, and his drastic improvement over the year. It's a wonderful experiment that we've tried, and Spo has a confidence in him, and he's basically a primary ball handler. So even as he's flattering Winslow and his growth this year, he kind of undercuts whether or not he could legitimately be a point guard. And maybe that's interesting considering he relied on Magic Johnson, during his coaching tenure with the Lakers.
Maybe I was just away from Heat Twitter for long enough, but this is the first time I've heard it framed that way. I took it as we got to get rid of that, as in like the labels of point guard or whatever. Like that's how I took it. Like we're not
right.
Like point guards, whatever. Yeah. But it's an interesting, like, was that kind of going around? I completely missed that.
I haven't seen it either. To be honest with you, I had not seen that, so I don't know if anybody takes Riley's comments again all too seriously because, he has been somewhat contradictory in his statements, and he is trying to put a public face of positivity and optimism when a lot of fans may not share in that positivity and optimism, so it totally makes sense. But again, he's confident that Winslow has made strides and he likes his overall approach to the game and his versatility and everything else. But at the same time, I'm not quite sure if he shares Spoelstra's faith in Winslow being the primary ball handler. Or maybe he does. I mean, maybe as you see, maybe he does think that he's got that potential, and rather than have that kind of label of quote unquote point guard, he's just the guy who handles the ball and he can do whatever he has to as long as there are other complementary ball handlers around him as well.
It's time for our stat of the game.
Take that for data.
David, what do you got?
I had to kind of go a little deep on this one, but I went with six. And six, that is the number of times this season that Derrick Jones Jr. has had two or more assists per game. You look at his game log there, not really good from the assist point. Yeah, a lot of zeros in there. Had one three-assist game. Tonight, he had two, including one where he was able to get past Vince Carter, feed Justice Winslow underneath the basket. It was a nice feed. But still, we've talked about this before, and that's why I kind of want to bring it up. The next step, I think, for Derrick is to kind of evolve a little bit as a playmaker, kind of finesse that ball handling a little bit because it's still very raw. I'm not sure if it's just because of his overall gangly body or whether or not he's a little too high off the dribble, and he's not really looking to put the ball down much, but I think that's the next step and making plays for others. And so I'm hoping that we can start to see a little bit more of this over the next 20 games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get assists when you basically get the ball either at the three-point line and you shoot it and you're shooting, or you're getting the ball above the rim and you're just dunking the ball. But you're right, like, those are kind of his only two spots. And you'd like to see him sort of get that ball from the corner, in the corner, and as opposed to just swinging it when he doesn't have the shot open, putting the ball on the floor and just sort of creating for himself. Sort of like what James Johnson is able to do when he's healthy at that same position. So that is absolutely the next step, but he's got time.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's shooting 36% for three. That's pretty solid. But I don't think defenses are worried about his outside shooting. No. And I think that's the next step, though. If he puts up a little bit more shots from the perimeter and he knocks those down at a similar rate, then they have to be a little bit concerned with that. And then he can start to pump fake, get past guys, make a move towards a basket there, and create offense for himself or somebody else there, as long as there's enough cutting along the baseline and things of that sort. And I'm hoping that that's the next step in his evolution, or at least part of it.
My stat of the game is 56-38, and that was the advantage that the Heat had over the Hawks in points in the paint. Mm-hmm. I thought this was interesting not because the Heat had such an advantage, and they did have clearly a major advantage here. But I thought it was interesting because that felt a little bit like Atlanta was sort of just giving it to them. And I don't want to take away too much from Miami, and I don't want to give Atlanta too much credit. Atlanta's interior defense was very much not very good, especially, as you mentioned, they were missing John Collins, who's a big body that they like to play there. But Miami was almost just sort of taking what the defense gave them and not really forcing the issue on the three-point shot. It would have been nice. Like, look, you take that in the first half. But the Heat shot 60% in the first half because all their stuff was coming in at the rim, but they were still only up one at halftime or something like that. It was a close game at halftime. That's because Atlanta had – oh, they were tied. So that's because Atlanta was taking like a bajillion more three-pointers than they were, and the Hawks finished with 46 three-pointers compared to just 23 for Miami. The Hawks literally took twice as many three-pointers as the Heat, and they kind of won the math problem. And even though the Heat beat the Hawks and – almost every aspect, I would say, by the end of the game, like, they just outplayed Atlanta, but Atlanta just took a bunch of more three-pointers, and they were sort of able to even things out that way. Would have been nice to see maybe in the second half Miami starting to leverage the way that they were able to get into the paint and then create open three-point looks that way. Again, don't want to take too much credit away from Atlanta. I think they purposely did it that way. They were guarding the three-point line pretty heavily, but also I don't want to give them too much credit because they're not that good of a basketball team, and I think Miami could have done that.
What did you think about Whiteside's impact off the bench? I think that's something we should have talked about tonight.
Right, yeah, he came off the bench, actually came off the bench behind Udonis Haslem, who came in the game first. It's been great to see him play a little bit.
Yes.
I thought he was, like, obviously rusty, slow but good. Like, he was fine. I mean, his plus-minus was great. He didn't negatively affect anything, which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's fair.
I didn't nothing see, blew me away.
Yeah, exactly. No major impact one way or the other. But as long as he's comfortable in this role, I doubt that's going to be something that we can see consistently. But at least until he's fully healthy, this is probably something we'll see play out over the next game or two.
That's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.